Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, Episode 80. What equipment do I need? Mr. Smith Talks Triathlon, practical triathlon advice for everyday athletes. My name is Gerard. I coach people for Ironman, Half Ironman, and other endurance events. I do this podcast as a way to share information and kickstart discussions within the team. So if you like what you hear, please search for Mr. Smith's Iron Team and find out how to join the discussion. The last episode I did was all about understanding your training plan. And I feel this is really, really important because when I write the training plans used by our team, they're written in advance, well in advance, and can't predict what's going to be like, how things are going to be for you at any point in time. So understanding the thinking behind the plan, understanding for you what's going on for you at the time, means that you can put those together and make sure that it's working for you. And we know that if you follow a training plan consistently over time, you are far more likely to have success. Now, when I was in that episode, I was talking a bit about equipment, so I wanted to follow that up and dive a bit deeper into what and why. So, what equipment do I need? I'm going to ignore the obvious things like shoes for running, goggles for swimming. I'm going to focus on the key things, and there will be others I don't talk about, but these are what I consider the key things. First of all, for your swim training, the very best one thing you can buy for swimming is a center snorkel. I know there's some people in my swim squad who just don't like them. Understand that it's not going to be right for everyone. But the idea with a center snorkel is you put this thing on and you can swim without having to turn your head to breathe. Because I can just about guarantee for everybody, if something's going to go wrong when you're swimming, it's going to be when you turn your head to breathe. So we don't want to use the snorkel all of the time, but we do want to use it. Fantastic for warm-ups, fantastic for when you're doing drills or technique work, because you can forget the movement of your head. You can go, check, are my hands in the right place? Is everything online? In line? Am I catching the water properly? Am I holding my body in the water properly? You can do all of that without the distraction of your body constantly moving and getting disrupted. So a center snorkel is the number one thing that will help your swimming. Number two, second thing, is fins. Most triathletes have a terrible kick. I'm sorry to tell you if you didn't already know. Okay, we generally are quite stiff ankles, inflexible, makes kicking very difficult, particularly blokes. So having fins, we're not putting these on as a crutch. We're not using them just to make us feel good from swimming faster. Putting fins on so that you can get some propulsion through the water when you're doing a bit of kicking, you can develop your kick. When you're doing drills, so that you're not just fighting the water the whole time. That's number two. The other things that I have feature quite strongly in my training plans, in my swim workouts, is a pull buoy, paddles, and bands. Used in different combinations, in different ways for different workouts. The whole idea is the pull buoy, it can help support your body and show you what position your body is going to be in when you're in the open water with a wetsuit on, giving you that buoyancy. Paddles, two things. You can use them for technique to help you feel and engage with the water better. You can use them for strength, pushing harder through the water. And a band is something that ties your ankles together so you can't kick. This means that you have to really hold your body strongly. Okay, you have to get really used to holding your body strongly, engaging your core, connecting everything together. Now, the bands are really cheap and easy. You can make one at home out of an inner tube. But those are the things for swimming. Definitely, if you want to improve your swimming, a center snorkel, fins, and the rest of it is really useful as well, but those first two are definitely the priority. Now, when it comes to cycling, number one, aero bars. You might have a TT bike, so they're built in. If you're someone who's using a road bike, then you'll see 99% of people in a half Ironman are going to have aero bars on their bike. Why? Because they make you faster. That is the best value money for thing you can do to go faster. Now, the reason I mention them now is that if it's not obvious, you most probably want these. And you want to get them now, okay? At the time of recording this, it's early September. You might think, oh, there's months to go. But your position on the bike is going to be different when you have aero bars. Your saddle is going to be adjusted, the height and the position of it. How you sit on and engage with the bike is going to be different. How you balance is going to be different. So if you haven't been using aero bars before, you want to get them now. And that way, it gives you months to slowly introduce them over time and get used to them. Okay, you really want that time so that you are fully comfortable in the position and you can maximize the use of those aero bars on the day. I know that not everyone is focused on maximum speed or the time, but honestly, they do make a big difference. So if you're spending money on anything to make you faster, it's always aero bars first. The next thing on my list is an indoor trainer. A lot of people have these days, but not everyone. And I've explained before that the whole idea with an indoor trainer is you've got it at home, you can use it no matter what the weather, you don't have to get from home, down the hill, across town, out to somewhere where there's clear roads to do your training. That takes time, and even when you get there, it might be a windy day, there might be traffic, there's intersections you have to deal with. Okay, so by having an indoor trainer, it's really time efficient. You can hop on. I try to keep most sessions to within an hour. And so you can do far more effective training within that hour on an indoor trainer than you can going out on the road. Now, if you haven't got an indoor trainer and you're looking at them, there is a huge range of options. Please don't buy a super cheap one. Indoor trainers that are around $100 new, there's a reason they're cheap, because they're cheap. Okay, they're not going to have the resistance or the performance that you're going to need. At the other end of the scale, there are smart trainers. These things are fabulous, but if your budget is not kind of $1,500 to $3,000 for a trainer, forget those for now. The very best value for money is around the $300 to $600 for just an ordinary trainer, but that's going to give you a good one. You can, of course, pick them up. There's plenty being sold all the time on Trade Me, on Bike Shelf. And so if you can find something that originally retails in that price range of $300 to $600, you might be able to get it a lot cheaper secondhand. Fabulous. Okay, a bit of a random one, might appear random, is for cycling, is cleaning products, chain lube and rags. And the fact is, particularly when it comes to the chain, if your chain is dirty, then it's going to be creating more resistance. You're going to have to work harder. You're going to be going, putting all of that effort in, but not getting as much out as a result of it. So honestly, a clean bike is a fast bike. Keeping your bike clean is going to keep it maintained and working better. Keeping your chain clean and lubed is going to make your cycling smoother and faster and better. Minor thing to do, totally worth it. For cycling, for people who haven't done a lot of cycling before, really important that you have spare tubes and the skills to change a puncture yourself. In Wellington, those who are training with the Tri Wellington group, you'll be riding with others, but you can't rely on those people. You'll be riding on your own at times, and you need the skills to be able to change this, fix a puncture, because it could happen in an event. Sorry, I don't mean to make you paranoid. It's a very, very minor number of people get punctures in events, but you have to have the skills to be able to fix that as quick as you can, get back on the road. Otherwise, you could be really pissed off on the side of the road. And just a very minor thing for cycling, for training, is two bottles and bottle cages on your bike. You're going to be riding long distances. You're going to be out there for 3 to 4 hour rides quite frequently in training. So if you've only got one bottle on your bike, either you're not going to be drinking enough as the days get warm up, or you're going to be stopping a lot to refill, which is just frustrating for everyone. So two bottles and cages. Okay, so those are quite minor things, but yeah, minor, cheap, but important in the scheme of it. I want to talk about technology briefly. A lot of people will have a GPS watch that they use. Now, a lot of people also look at that watch to go, oh, I'm running at, let's say, 5 minute Ks, or my heart rate is 145. Okay, so it tells you that information. What you really want to use this for is the context, okay? So if I'm running at 5 minute Ks, is that the right level of effort, like right level of pace for me for this workout? So if you're going to buy a GPS watch, train by heart rate, by pace, any of those kind of things, you have to realize that to get the benefit out of those, you're going to have to do some testing, okay? And you're going to have to do some testing. My favorite for running is a park run. You go and run 5K as fast as you possibly can, and then from there, you can calculate your training zones. So if you're going to buy a GPS watch, you have to be prepared to do those tests to get the most value out of it. Just knowing what your pace is right now is completely missing the context of the workout and what's right for you. So, but training, if you haven't had this stuff before, it's fantastic because it helps you understand how hard or not you should be going at different points in training. You can do it by running pace. You can do it by heart rate. And then for those who are investing in a power meter, you can also do it by power for cycling. Now, on the power meter, it's really, really valuable, okay? Because when you're training by heart rate, when you put an effort in, it takes several minutes for your heart rate to come up and reflect the effort you're putting in. So, and also, when you're on an indoor trainer, it feels very different to being outdoors. So it's quite hard to understand initially until you learn how hard you're going. So a power meter, it takes all of that out of the equation, because as soon as you push hard on those pedals, the power number changes and it tells you how hard you're going. So power meter makes indoor training a lot more meaningful. You're not just either spinning randomly or you're not trying hard but without knowing really how hard you're going. When you're riding outdoors, a power meter can help guide your effort for a race. In a race, most people on the bike start too hard because you feel fresh, you feel excited, other people are going fast, you get carried away by that. A power meter helps you control that, set the right level right from the start. Like I mentioned about the GPS watch though, you have to be prepared to do some testing to really push yourself in some tests. And you do want to be a bit of a data person with the power meter to get the most out of it. Now, if you don't have the money to invest in a power meter, there is a much cheaper option for using it with indoor cycling. And it's called Virtual Power. If you Google that, you'll find out that a lot of the indoor training apps like Zwift, Trainer Road, various other ones, what you need is a bike, an indoor trainer, a speed sensor, which is relatively cheap to buy, and then one of these apps, Zwift, Trainer Road, etc. Putting all of those things together, these apps can go, well, I know that indoor trainer, when you're going this speed on it, it takes this much power to go at that speed. So it does all of the calculations for you. So it's a cheaper way to get started with training with power. So if that's of interest to you, do check it out. And the whole idea with that technology is that it enhances your training. It's really easy to get caught up in details and numbers, and you should never be a slave to exact numbers. The whole purpose of these things is to guide you to be at the approximately the right level of intensity for your training, for your racing. Okay, strength training. The strength workouts I put into a training plan are pretty simple. They use stuff around the house, steps, chairs, those kind of things. But there's a couple of bits of equipment that are really useful to have. Mini bands, things that go around your ankles or knees, create some resistance. You can buy these online, Kmart, just about anywhere online, Trade Me, various shops, you can find those. And kettlebells, these are a bit pricier, heavy, got various weights, but using kettlebells is probably the best piece of at-home equipment that you could invest in to help with your strength work. Okay, finally, I'm going to touch on things that you will need for your event. Very first one is obviously a wetsuit. And of course, you're going to be doing some open water swim training before the event. A wetsuit, there are heaps of options out there. It's almost like buying a bike. There are so many options. These days, there are really no bad wetsuits out there. The big name, the main brands that you can get in New Zealand, that they make good wetsuits. What you find, though, is there's a huge price range between the cheapest and the most expensive wetsuits. Okay, the most expensive ones are really made for really good swimmers, people who are faster swimmers. They are really strongly in touch with the water and their body position. They're not really designed with much flotation in them. So just buying the most expensive wetsuit isn't necessarily the best one. There are wetsuits out there for people with sinky legs. There are wetsuits out there for people of different body shapes and sizes. The ones that are most expensive suit the fastest swimmers. The ones that are cheapest are made to be as cheap as they can just to sell a wetsuit. You're probably going to find something somewhere in between there. The best thing you can do is go into a shop that has a range of wetsuits to be able to talk to them, ask for some advice, try some different ones on. Just also on buying a wetsuit, of course you can buy them secondhand, but you really need to do that research to understand which one is right for you. That takes a fair bit of work. Okay, also for swimming, tinted goggles. In your event, you're going to be starting early in the morning, somewhere between Rotorua does a 5:15 is the earliest start, probably somewhere between there and 7 a.m. So in that time, the sun is going to be coming up. You will be swimming into the sun at some point. Tinted goggles, really, really valuable, so you can actually see where you're going. There's always a lot of talk about race wheels. These things are fabulous. They come at a price, though. So if you don't have the budget for race wheels, you can, of course, rent them or borrow them if you know someone. So race wheels, if you're in the market for those, fantastic. I won't talk about details because the more important thing is your tyres. Okay, anybody can put a good set of tyres on ordinary wheels and go faster because of it. There's always a concern from people that the race tyres, they're a bit thinner, they're more likely to get a puncture. But if you've done your work in knowing how to change a puncture, develop those skills, then you're going to be able to change one pretty quickly. And there's only ever a very small proportion of people who get a puncture in an event. So race tyres, they are worth a good amount of time. So it is something seriously to look at as you get closer to your event. The other thing is an aero helmet in terms of value for money. An ordinary cycling helmet, great for everyday training, for everything else. But if you want a bit of extra speed, aero helmets definitely are faster. So if you have the money to spend, that's up on the list in terms of value for money, definitely before race wheels. And the very last thing is just stretchy laces for your running shoes. And this is not just about being speediest through transition. It helps those people. But it's also about not having to stop and do up your shoelaces if they come undone during the run. Seems like a minor thing, but it can be a real annoyance if you're at that critical point of you're either trying to achieve a time or you're really in the zone. Stopping and fiddling with those is really annoying. Stretchy laces, cheap, simple solution. All right, that's everything I've been through. It took a lot longer than I expected. Like I said, I haven't talked about every single piece of equipment. I've talked about what I consider to be the important ones, things that you might want to know about. I don't expect you to go and buy everything on the list, but you've got ideas so you can prioritise your spending, where you're going to invest your money.